Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated December 8, 2017. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Chipotle rezoning gets okay. Plan Commission gives nod to project. City Council has final say. Development of a 10,400-square-foot shopping center anchored by Chipotle Mexican Grill has moved one step closer to fruition, despite objections from residents worried about its effect on their neighborhood. The Decatur Plan Commission voted 5-2 to recommend rezoning of 1.6 acres near the intersection of West Ash Avenue and U.S. Business 51 for commercial use. The matter now heads to the Decatur City Council for consideration at a future meeting. City officials say the plan will likely come up during one of its January meetings. The Commission's decision came after nearly 2 hours of discussion, during which representatives from Deerfield-based developer GMX Real Estate, LLC, and opponents to the plan made their case. Comments made during Thursday's meeting were similar to those at a public hearing on November 27th, where residents spent more than an hour raising concerns about the increased traffic such a development would bring, and the effect of the businesses on their property values and quality of life. As proposed, the shopping center would have space for 2 restaurants, 2 retailers, and 82 parking spots. According to the developer's presentation to the commission, the center would create between 15 to 30 full-time jobs. The plan is for all businesses at the center to be open by the end of next year. Parents live one house over from the planned development site said the existing infrastructure is already an issue for residents without the addition of restaurants and retail next door. He also doubted that the developers claim that the shopping center would bring in $3 million to $4.5 million annually in sales revenue. Forbes said he thought Chipotle would just spread out an already dwindling amount of disposable income available in the area, given the number of restaurants near the site and Decatur's general economic situation. The negatives are more than the positives, Forbes said. Others ask why the city and the developers could not work together and find a separate location for the business. Speaking after the meeting, GMX co-manager Andrew Goodman said Chipotle officials have not told them of any other possible locations that they would consider in Decatur, nor whether they would be interested in looking at other Decatur locations. While he said he was sympathetic to the concerns raised by the residents, Goodman said the location plan for rezoning is too good for many businesses to want to pass up. Traffic is a double-edged sword. It causes the concerns that you heard here at the meeting, he said. On the flip side, traffic is what drives retailers and restaurants to want to locate there. For developers, the site is highly attractive because of its high traffic count and location near other retail. Walgreens, Panera, Walmart, and other businesses are across the highway. But on the west side of U.S. Business 51 are well-established neighborhoods, many with residents who've lived there for decades and say that they do not want the area disrupted by more retail and the traffic it brings. Commissioners Bill Clevenger, Bruce Jeffrey, Susie Peck, Kent Newton, and Terry Smith voted to recommend approval for the rezoning, while Commissioners Bruce Franz and Jeff Myatt voted against it. Commissioners Mike Peoples and G.E. Livingston were not in attendance. A commission recommendation does not always mean the council will go ahead with the plan, as the commission recommended approval for the rezoning of the same site in 2015 for the construction of an Aldi. The city council later rejected that rezoning plan. Deputy City Manager Billy Tias said Thursday that he wanted to emphasize that the city was not involved in the negotiations or creation of this proposal, although city staff has talked about possible locations with GMX and other developers who want to move into the city. This has been a private transaction between the development company and the property owners for where this development will be located, he said. Ultimately, the developers have chosen the site and the city is asked to make a land use decision related to it. Chipotle is the only business currently confirmed for the site, Goodman said. He added that discussions are ongoing with other family-friendly businesses, but declined to identify those potential tenants. According to a letter sent to the city signed by Goodman, the developers will make a commitment to hire local subcontractors for construction of the project. Both Tyus and Goodman said Thursday that no tax breaks have been offered to the developers, nor have the developers asked for any incentives on the project. We're proposing to invest a lot of money into this, and it's going to be our money, Goodman said. In other business, the Decatur Plan Commission also voted to recommend a plan that would allow the construction of a new Decatur Fire Department station at 330 West Mound Road. If approved by the Decatur City Council, the corner of West Mound Road and Green Ridge Drive would be the new home of Station Number 5, now located at 225 East Christine Drive, just north of Brentwood Village. Fire Chief Jeff Abbott told the commission that the new fire station would allow firefighters to arrive more quickly at emergencies on the north side of the city. Two people spoke up against the location of the new firehouse, with concerns about street parking and traffic. The plan will now head to the Decatur City Council for approval, possibly as early as its December 18th meeting. And here's the results of a poll taken about Chipotle in Decatur. GMX Real Estate Group announced Wednesday that a Chipotle Mexican Grill would be part of its proposed development at the corner of U.S. Business 51 and Ash Avenue. Neighbors object to the development. In a poll at Herald and Review, we ask readers what they thought. Total votes, 288. So 14% said I would prefer Decatur not have a Chipotle at all, 41 votes. 36% said I don't care about Chipotle, but that corner is perfect for retail. That was 47 votes and 16% of the poll. The city council should do whatever it takes to get Chipotle. That was 98 votes, and that represents 34%. And the last is Chipotle is great, but not on that corner, and that garnered 102 votes. World War II, remembering Pearl Harbor. Veteran tells of call to serve on 76th anniversary of attack. Pete Frank remembers the attack on Pearl Harbor differently than some. He was a junior in high school when he heard President Franklin D. Roosevelt's speech before Congress asking for a declaration of war, which inspired him to serve his country, he said. The war took the boys of Decatur and turned them into men, Frank said, in faraway and unknown places. They'd only previously learned about in textbooks and on maps. On December 7, 1941, Japan launched a surprise attack on the U.S. Navy base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. The attack that killed 2,403 people and decimated the U.S. Pacific Fleet shocked the nation and led to the United States entering World War II. The Macon County Honor Guard and Veterans Assistance Commission of Macon County conducted a three-volley rifle salute and playing of taps for Thursday's 76th anniversary of the Pearl Harbor attack. The U.S. Navy provided a wreath to place on Lake Decatur from a dock in Nelson Park, said Dave Frayling, chairman of the Veterans Assistance Commission of Macon County. Frank said he joined the Navy, U.S. Navy, following his graduation from high school, one of many to do so from Decatur, he said. He read some of the famous lines from Roosevelt's speech that inspired him to answer the call of service to the group gathered Thursday. Standing before Congress the day after the attack, Roosevelt called December 7, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. He said the United States was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan, but promised inevitable triumph, so help us God. Congress passed a war declaration that was signed by Roosevelt that day. The United States would be at war across the globe until Japan's formal surrender on September 2, 1945. Thursday's event was to honor the memory of Pearl Harbor, those who died there and in the following years of World War II. They also remembered those who survived the war and all veterans. The group hoped to remember those who have taken up the call to defend the American way of life, said Frank, a lifelong resident of Decatur. The number of World War II veterans is shrinking each day, taking their experiences and memories with them, Frank said. According to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, there are 558,000 surviving World War II veterans out of about 16 million who served. Illinois has just under 21,000 World War II veterans still living. Frehling said it's important for people to remember such events and learn from them. He compared the way younger people experienced the terrorist attacks on September 11, 2001, when planes flew into the World Trade Center towers in New York City, killing 2,996 people, to the way the older generations experienced Pearl Harbor. To a lot of people, 9/11 was their Pearl Harbor, he said. People have a tendency to forget it. It's been a long time. By the numbers, on December 7th, 1941, Japan launched a surprise attack on the U.S. Pacific Fleet at its Pearl Harbor base in Hawaii. Japanese planes were 354, U.S. casualties 2,403, U.S. ships destroyed or damaged 19, Japanese ships from attack that survived the war 1. Warehouse cleanup nears end. Decatur Union Partnership could save $100,000 at the clearing site. Decatur, barring any setbacks, cleanup of the rubble of the former Action Equipment building on East Grand Avenue is expected to wrap up by the end of next week at a significantly lower cost than city officials feared. Through a partnership between the City of Decatur and Springfield's Operating Engineers Local 965, site cleanup began earlier this week, nearly 3 years after fire gutted the century-old warehouse that once stood there. It was a promise that we made to the community that we would get this cleaned up before the end of 2017, Decatur City Manager Tim Gleason said. The city initially estimated the cleanup would cost about $300,000. While the total cost won't be known until the work is completed, Gleason said, internal estimates optimistically place the savings at about $100,000 through this partnership. The union is using the operation as a training opportunity for apprentices, and city employees and trucks are being used to take the rubble to nearby landfill. The partnership is one of the ways Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said that the city can get creative about handling its financial situation. The city approved a budget on Monday that has a $3.2 million deficit. We couldn't have afforded to clean it up on our own, so we talked to the unions who offered help, she said. It's cut our costs tremendously. We didn't just do it the way we've always done it. We found ways to make it work with our community members. A massive fire destroyed the building, which has housed a restaurant equipment business in January 2015. Property was not insured, and the city took owner Robert Powell to court to force him to remove the large piles of charred bricks and other debris left behind when the structure collapsed. Powell died in April of 2016, and the city postponed the case. Questions about how to pay for the site cleanup had been ongoing for well over a year, Gleason said, but the partnership came from a conversation Moore Wolf had with union officials. Kent Campbell, the apprenticeship training coordinator at Local 965, who is overseeing the cleanup, said Moore Wolf attended one of the union's recent open houses in Springfield. Campbell said they were explaining the apprenticeship opportunities they provide and the hands-on work they've done in the Springfield area when Moore Wolf asked if they would be interested in doing something in Decatur. From there, Campbell said, talks continued, and plans were laid to start work this week. This is one of our various ways for our members to work in their communities. It's a win-win, Campbell said. And we're giving back to the community with the apprentices, and the apprentices are getting excellent training on something we cannot simulate at our training facility. It's good for the local government as well, as it helps save them some money. and about 15 apprentices with 4 to 5 on site at a time are using heavy machinery to remove piles of bricks, pipes, and other debris from the site, which takes up nearly an entire block along North Illinois Street between East Grand Avenue and East Locust Street. The rubble, which is believed to contain asbestos, has been sitting there since the fire. The massive fire required firefighters from across the region were called in to battle the blaze, which could be seen for miles as it lit up the night sky. Campbell said apprentices are using a water hose to suppress asbestos or dust during the cleanup. Due to the condition of the materials, he said that they will not be recycling any of the bricks. We cannot really recycle bricks because of the way the building collapsed on itself, and it's completely mixed in with the metal and wood, he said. It would be impossible in this situation. It just wouldn't be cost-effective. The cleanup has been a welcome sight for Mary Woods, who lives in a house diagonally from the site. Though she has only lived in her home for about a year, Woods said that she's hated the sight of rubble from the very beginning. She also detests the rodents who call the rubble home. I've killed over 20 mice since I moved in here, she said, noting the worst of it came last month when a mouse died inside of her stove, causing a foul smell whenever she tried to cook. To fend off the mice, Woods said she recently purchased a cat named Smokey from an acquaintance. I don't even like cats. I just needed to do something to take care of the mice, she said. The city must pay for the cleanup after the owner of the property, Robert Powell, died last year. Before then, Powell and the city had been tied up in a protracted legal battle over paying for the cleanup. The building was not insured at the time of the fire. From 1894, the three-story building was home to Ferry's Manufacturing, one of Decatur's stalwarts of the industrial area, which made various commercial and consumer goods like kitchen cabinets, mirrors, bird cages, and stands. Its Art Deco-style lamps from the 1930s are still sought after by some collectors. Demand for its products fell off in the late 1940s and 1950s, and the business sold the building to Saul Tick & Company in 1955 and moved to Elkhart, Indiana. Powell bought the warehouse in 1979 and ran his restaurant equipment business out of it until the fire. As the site clears, Woods had a simple answer about how she felt about the cleanup. It's about time, she said. Also on the front page is Franken quits with angry words for Trump. Arizona Representative Trent Franks also resigns effective January 3rd, Washington. Senator Al Franken, a rising political star only weeks ago, reluctantly announced Thursday he's resigning from Congress, succumbing to a torrent of sexual harassment allegations and evaporating support from fellow Democrats. But he fired a departing shot at President Donald Trump and other Republicans he said have survived much worse accusations. I, of all people, am aware that there is some irony in the fact that I am leaving while a man who has bragged on tape about his history of sexual assault sits in the Oval Office, and a man who has repeatedly preyed on young girls campaigns for the Senate with full support of his party, Franken said. The 66-year-old Minnesotan, a former Saturday Night Live comedian who made a successful leap to liberal U.S. senator, announced his decision in a subdued Senate chamber 3 weeks after the first accusations of sexual misconduct emerged just a day after most of his Democratic colleagues proclaimed he had to go. His remarks underscored the bitterness many in the party feel toward a GOP that they say made a political calculation to tolerate Trump and Alabama GOP Senate candidate Roy Moore, who've both been accused of sexual assaults that they've denied. In largely unapologetic remarks that lasted 11 minutes, Franken said all women deserve to be heard, but asserted that some accusations against him were untrue. He called himself a champion of women during his Senate career who fought to improve people's lives. Even on the worst day of my political life, I feel it's all been worth it, he said. Franken's departure, which he said would occur in coming weeks, made him the latest figure from politics, journalism, and the arts to be toppled since October. That's when the first articles appeared, revealing sexual abuse allegations against Hollywood titan Harvey Weinstein and energizing the hashtag MeToo movement, in which women have named men they say abused or harassed them. Democratic Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton will name a temporary successor who will serve until a special election next November. Franken's comments appended a melancholy coda to the political career of the one-time TV funny man who became one of his party's most popular and bellicose liberals. Just 2 days earlier, Representative John Conyers, Democrat of Michigan, a civil rights hero who'd been the House's longest-serving current member, resigned after facing sexual harassment allegations of his own. The two departures underscored the party's determination to show no tolerance for such behavior, a strategy that can bring stunningly fast conclusions to political careers, but that party leaders believe could give them high moral ground on a subject that's shown no sign of fading. Later Thursday, Representative Trent Franks, Republican of Arizona, resigned as well, effective January 3rd, after admitting he asked two female staff aides about becoming a surrogate mother. The 8-term lawmaker, a staunch conservative and fierce opponent of abortion, said in a statement that he never physically intimidated, coerced, or attempted to have any sexual contact with any member of his congressional staff. The House Ethics Committee late Thursday also opened an investigation into Representative Blake Farenthold, Republican of Texas, for allegations he sexually harassed a former staff aide and retaliated against her for complaining of discrimination. On a 2005 audio tape released shortly before last year's presidential election, Trump is heard talking about grabbing women, and several women accused him of sexual assaults. Women in Alabama have accused Moore of unwanted sexual contact and pursuing romantic relationships when they were teenagers, and he was in his 30s during the 1970s. Asked about Franken's comments about him on Thursday, Trump merely replied, "I didn't hear it, sorry." At least 8 women had accused Franken of inappropriate sexual behavior. Until this week, he said he'd remain in the Senate and cooperate with investigations into his behavior. The breaking point came Wednesday when a former Democratic congressional aide said he forcibly tried to kiss her in 2006, an accusation he denied. Hours later, another woman said he inappropriately squeezed a handful of flesh on her waist while posing for a photograph with her in 2009. On Thursday, Franken walked to the Senate chamber shortly before noon, hand in hand with his wife of 35 years, Franny. As he spoke, members of his family watched from the visitors' gallery, some sobbing. Franken said that thanks to them, I'm going to be just fine. This week at HeraldReview.com calendar, today, a Sousified Christmas Carol at 7 p.m., Tabernacle Baptist Church, a whimsical reinvention of Dickens' most beloved Christmas story in wacky rhymed couplets. Saturday, Fort Daniel Winter Mammal Hike, 2 p.m., Fort Daniel Conservation Area, Decatur, naturalist-led hike to spot cold weather native mammals. Register online. Sunday, MDSO and Chamber Orchestra Advent Service at 10:30 a.m., Central Christian Church, Decatur. Audience singers are welcome for a special Hallelujah sing-along. And corrections. Kason Reynolds volunteered to wrap gifts that were bought by other children during the Shop with the Sheriff event Wednesday at Target in Decatur. His involvement in the event was unclear in the photo cutline that ran with the story Shopping with the Sheriff on the front page of Thursday, December 7th, Herald and Review. In the same story, Macon County Sheriff's Deputy Chris Adams' last name was misspelled. The paper aired. There were no students in the cafeteria when the school resource officer arrived during the shooting at Mattoon High School on September 20th, the story Hero Teacher Retells Shooting on A3 of the Thursday, December 7th Herald and Review included incorrect information, the newspaper aired. A plane ticket from Decatur to Chicago cost $69 if taking a flight from Decatur Airport. The pricing information was incorrect in the story ADM to pay up to $100,000 for airport renovations on the front page of Thursday, December 7th, Herald and Review, the newspaper aired. On page 3, Decatur man guilty of attempted murder. Hyde convicted for shooting and wounding man. Preston Hyde faces the prospect of spending the next half century behind bars after he was convicted of attempted murder Thursday in Macon County Circuit Court. A jury came back after 3 hours of deliberations and found the Decatur man guilty of shooting and wounding Bruce Green 4 times on April 13th. Hyde was also convicted on 2 counts of aggravated discharge of a firearm. Hyde, 30, who is being held in the Macon County Jail, is due to be sentenced January 19th. The attempted murder charge, a Class X felony, carries a maximum 30-year sentence with a 25-year enhancement for using a firearm. Bruce Green told the jurors during his testimony Wednesday that he was shot twice in the body, once in the thigh and once in the arm, as he sat in the back of a vehicle in the 400 block of East Orchard Street. Green, his wife, and another woman had gone to the assistance of Hyde's pregnant girlfriend, who is also Green's niece, after the hysterical woman had asked for help during an argument with Hyde. Hyde chose not to testify in his own defense. Defense attorney Scott Reuter tried to convince the jury it was a case of mistaken identity and that Hyde was not the shooter. Hyde's mother, Celestine Hyde, and his sister, Jolenique Hyde, testified that they had picked him up from near his girlfriend's home hours before the shooting, which had happened about 11 a.m. They said he was babysitting with a relative's children at the family's home when the shooting happened. But Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott cast doubt on the alibi, telling the jury Hyde's mother and sister had not even mentioned this story until October. Scott also put Bruce Green on the stand, and Green said that he had known Hyde for 7 years and had no doubt who had shot him. Green has made a full recovery, but said one of the bullets remains lodged in his body for life. Judge James Coryell set sentencing hearing for January 19th. And on page 4 in Nation in the World, there's a picture of an older veteran wiping his eyes. America marked 76th anniversary of Pearl Harbor attack. About 20 survivors gathered Thursday at the site of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor in Hawaii to remember fellow servicemen killed in the early morning raid 76 years ago, paying homage to the thousands who died with a solemn ceremony marking the surprise bombing raid that plunged the U.S. into World War II. They were joined by about 2,000 Navy sailors, officials, and members of the public. Meanwhile, President Donald Trump met with a half a dozen World War II veterans at the White House as he signed a proclamation declaring it National Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day. Above, that's the picture, Pearl Harbor survivor Armando Chip Galella wipes a tear from his eye after speaking at the event, at an event, in New York City. That's all we have time for the first half of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated December 8th, 2017. This is Barbara Ridenour. Stay tuned.